Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. I may sound a little bit under the weather. I am, but I will be game ready come Thursday night. Hope that you guys are doing well. Hope that you can kind of tolerate a little nasally voice today. But yeah, I'll be okay. Yesterday was not a good day, but today has been better. Not to be confused with good. But I hope that you are well wherever you are today. We do have supposedly some tornadic weather expected in the area, in the greater Starkville area tonight. Should rain throughout the night and on into the morning, but we should be able to get the game in with no trouble on Thursday night. I interviewed Coach Butch Thompson from Auburn, our former pitching coach, a guy that we all know and love, earlier today. You can read that over at jeanspage.com if you're a VIP member. If not, you should be. You can get 50% off the annual subscription price right now. Be sure and check that special out and get the most comprehensive coverage of Mississippi State baseball that Al Gore's internet has ever seen. Let me remind you, too, Mother's Day is coming up. And if you're thinking about a unique gift for Mother's Day, you know, you've stressed every mom in your life out, whether they're your mom, the mother of your children, your mother-in-law, your sisters, you have stressed them out. Give them the gift of relaxation from True Rest Float Spa Starkville. You can get two floats for $99. What a great value. Dial 662-268-7601 for more information. You'll be glad you did. We're going to do a quick recap of the game against Nicholls State today. We got a cool top 10 list. We'll look around the league. And, of course, we'll end up previewing the series with Auburn. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of the show. We love Bulldog Burger Company, and I plan to partake in some Bulldog Burger Company tomorrow. That's the plan. That's one good thing about being home for a full week. Is you can kind of plan out your meals and incorporate some great goodness from Bulldog Burger Company. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. It's true. Try me on this. The best appetizer in Starkville proper, I think we would say. I think so. Probably my number two is the broccoli bites at Harvey's. That's probably number two on my list. Yeah. So a lot of new items on the menu that are there for your enjoyment. If you haven't been in a while, we encourage you to go check them out. Check out those smash burgers. And maybe if you're feeling beautiful that day, maybe have the chili cheese fries. I like to add some jalapenos on mine because I'm a little bit spicy anyway. But be sure and check that out and get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet, M-E-A-T. All right, let's jump right into this Nicholls game. I won't say it went entirely to script. I thought we would win. I did not think we would win by this margin. I was hoping for a seven-inning game. Bulldogs pretty much put it away in the first. Chris Billingsley back on the midweek bump. Doesn't get off to the best starts, but he does kind of settle down a little bit, and he kind of hit the wall. I was hoping he could go the full seven, to be honest with you. I mean, I know how improbable that sounds, but I'm just thinking, man, I don't care if we win the game 27-12. But just saving some arms for the weekend. But I like what Coach had to say. We needed to get Jack Gleason back out there, and Parker Rhodes is now healthy again and wanted to get a good outing for him, and we did. But we start out, we get Arteagues to ground out the second, then give up a Rio Berger single back up the middle. And then Thompson, a native of JS, Mississippi, homers to center field. It's 2-0, and it was awfully chippy and chirpy over there in the Nicholls dugout. Well, then Jenkins has walked on four pitches, so Parker goes out to kind of settle Billingsley down. We get a ground ball, can't get two, but we force the runner, and then we have a caught stealing to get out of it. So 2-0, and the Bulldog offense is like, hey, Bill, don't worry about it. We got you. Garrett Fry works a lengthy at-bat for a inning-opening walk. Reese flies out to center. And they tried to pick off Garrett at first, and he was kind of in no man's land. A good throw gets him, but instead it's a wild throw. He takes off to second. Bevis then doubles to right center. That thing was well north of 100 off the bat. Fry comes around to score. Sully then walks. I thought Sully had a really good approach last night. Sully walks, and then Parker. It always seems Jacob Parker gets caught doing something right. Singles to center field. The run scores. It's now 2-2. And then Parker still second. Bryce Chance, lengthy at bat, gets a walk. Parker takes third on a wild pitch. And then Chance still second. So we already got 2 men in scoring position, less than 2 outs. Stallman then doubles to right center. And that was an absolute tomahawk job, too, on a 1-2 count. Now it's 4-2. Maluski walks. And that's it for Vargas. He did not survive the first. They bring in Avery. And then he walks wires to load the bases. Fry then gets an infield single, just kind of a number past the mound towards third. There's no play to be made there. The run scores. It's 5-2 State. Then Ace Reese hammers one to right field for just a single, but a couple runs score to make it 7-2. And then Beavis walks. I mean, it's just we just kind of kept putting pressure on. Sully walks, forces in a run, makes it 8-2. And then Jacob Parker hits another grand slam to right center. It's 12-2, and then Chance flies out. So 12 runs in the first for the Bulldogs, most productive inning of the year offensively. And Billingsley just kind of settles in. Even though he had to sit for a while, he gets a 1-2-3 inning. Schaefer, their best hitter, flies out. Malam, no relation to Stephen Malam of LSU, flies out the center. And then Terry flies out the center. So all fly balls there. It means we're getting pretty good rise on that fastball. Bottom of the second, they bring in Trischel, and the first pitch he throws is now a souvenir as Reed Stallman homers to right field. Maluski then goes down swinging, and then wires homers to left, make it 14-2. Fry strikes out swinging. Reese singles up the middle, his second of 4 hits, and Blake Bevis files out to left fielder. Top of third, Billings, we just still rolling along here, gets Ingersoll, the 9-hole hitter, to go down swinging. Artigue's leadoff guy also swinging on 3 pitches. And then Rio Berger pops up to the second baseman, Garrick Fry, in short right. Bottom of three, they bring in Lacy. Sully flies out to right field. Parker then strikes out swinging. And then Chance kind of gets it going here. 2-out rally started by Bryce Chance. Where have you heard that before? Stallman then homers to center. It's now 16-2. Jackson Owen comes in. Grounds to third. The throw is in the dirt. He reaches on the error. Wires and singles to center. Gat Sanders comes in. I was hoping he'd get his first hit of the year, but he grounds out to short. So it's 16-2 as we go to the fourth. And then we had a little trouble. You know, Bill Winsley kind of hit the wall here. Thompson flies out to center. Then Jenkins, singles to left. Geiger, first pitch swinging, singles to left. Schaefer's walk to load the bases. We go out and have a visit. Then Malam singles to left. A run scores, makes it 16-3. And then Terry singles off of Billingsley. And it goes into the state dugout, right? Just one of those wild things that happens. 2 runs are scored on a play. Gleason comes in to get Ingersoll to strike out looking, and Artigue lines out to right field. So it's 16-5 as we head to the bottom of four. And State gets a couple of those runs right back. Reese homers off Benson to make it 17-5. Bevis strikes out swinging, and then Sullivan singles to center. Takes second on a wild pitch. Parker grounds out to short. Sully takes third, and then Sully scores on the wild pitch. Just kind of manufacturing that run. Nunley grounds out to second base to make it 18-5 as we had the five. Rio Berger singles up the middle. Thompson goes down swinging. Jenkins, again, chance for double play here. We couldn't get it turned. And then Geiger triples to center field. Tough run scores there, makes it 18-6. Schaefer pops out. However, they call CI on Andrew Raymond. And then he is eventually thrown out stealing. Yeah. Bottom of five. State gets those runs back and then some. We kind of cap the scoring here. Stallman singles to the right side. 4 hits on the night for him. Raymond singles to the right side. Wire strikes out swinging. Sanders out at first. It kind of works like a bunt. And then Reese homers to right field. 3 runs scored to make it 21-6, and that does cap the scoring. Vitas Valinkas comes in and hits it. It's an absolute worm burner towards first. Diving catch made there to end the inning. Top of six, Bulldogs subbing liberally here. Had to bring in Sean James in place of Raymond as he'd take a foul ball off of his hand. They had a lot of pinch hitters, too, for Nichols. Miller goes down swinging, and during that at-bat, Raymond gets banged up. We don't have an update for you yet. We hope to get one for you Thursday night. Mock pinch hits. I don't know if he's related to Paul or not, but he walks. Irvin goes down swinging, and then Dettillier flies out to right field. That ends the top of six. Shex Nader comes in to pitch the bottom of six for Nichols. Does a good job. Sully grounds out to short. After a lengthy at-bat, Parker singles to right. Nunnally strikes out swinging, and Stallman flies out to center. He was the triple short of the cycle. I thought that ball was getting out initially, but it didn't. So Stallman clearly seeing it well last night. Top of seven. Maddox singles to right field. Beidiger pinch hits and goes down swinging. Jenkins singles, and then Mabry pinch hits here. Wild pitch sends both guys along, but Mabry goes down swinging. Schaefer strikes out swinging, and that's your ballgame. 21-6 is your final. And again, most of the highlights happened in the first inning, but the Bulldogs, a lot of long balls last night, for sure. State gets 18 hits against 10 for Nichols. Nichols does commit a couple of errors. State has one error. But nevertheless, good offensive night. And listen, we know Nichols' midweek pitching isn't going to be great, okay? But it's good to see the guys have a good two-strike approach, not really expand the plate and swing a lot of bad pitches. We mentioned some of the hitting heroes. Ace Reese goes 4-for-5 with 6 RBI and 3 runs scored. That dog will hunt. Jacob Parker, 3-for-5 with 5 RBI and 2 runs scored. Reed Stallman, 4-for-5, 5 RBI with 4 runs scored. Drew Wires, 2-for-3, couple runs scored and an RBI for him, of course, on the solo home run. Ace hits 2, Parker hits 1, Stallman hits 2, and Wires hits 1. So it's good to see that kind of moving on here. Of course, Andrew Raymond had an error and had the CI there. So pretty clean baseball for the most part for the Bulldogs, and so much of it didn't matter there, you know. In the end, Mississippi State's just simply a better team. So a lot of people wondered, you know, hey, what's this going to do to the RPI? One of the things I tried to kind of prepare you guys for is a lot of the teams within our league that were playing last night were playing teams with comparable RPIs, except for A&M that was playing Prairie View that had a north of 300. Auburn was playing UAB, which is around 40, and Alabama was playing Troy. So your Bulldogs, even after all the dust settles, picks up a spot in the RPI by playing Nichols. Bulldogs now 8 in the RPI, according to Warren Nolan, which is pretty close to the mark there. So that's 8. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. And for some, summer is their favorite season of the year. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, adventure becomes a focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough. It could be overwhelming. Then they start counting down the minutes until the kids are back in school. And you feel like you're wasting all these days of beautiful sunshine. We plan to get out and have some fun as a family too, but we plan to thrive and not just survive. Therapy can help people better understand their needs and feel more confident setting boundaries and create a version of summer that actually feels good. BetterHelp has over 30,000 therapists. It is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct, and they are fully licensed in the United States. The reality of it is you need to learn how to say no. You don't have to say yes to everything. Take advantage of BetterHelp and take charge of your summer. You don't have to say yes. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. And then, again, our strength of schedule will only improve over the course of the next 2 weeks. State's strength of schedule overall is 12. Auburn is number one, right? And then Texas A&M is right at 28. But their RPI, both in the top dozen or so, will help Mississippi State. We are done with midweek games. The Bulldogs are now 12-1 in the 13 midweek games and 23-2 in non-conference play. The only two non-conference losses come at the Arlington event against number one UCLA, and then a road game down at Southern Miss when they were ranked number 10. So I think at the beginning of the year, if we had told you, hey, you're only going to lose two non-conference games, that's probably the two you'd pick. Unless maybe you consider the governor's game, right? Even though we have owned Ole Miss for really our entire history, but the better this last decade for sure. But again, I think the better's choice, if I told you beginning of the year, you're probably going to lose two, you'd pick number one UCLA and probably on the road at Southern Miss. Right? Or maybe you'd pick Arizona State. I mean, there's only a handful of games. It was a real possibility. But the reality of it is State's win last night did nothing to hurt their RPI. And again, there's just, you know, Southern Miss, you know, we're kind of in contention, I think, with them in many respects. A lot of people say if we both get a regional, they'll pair us up. I just don't know if that's the case. Could be. Depends really on how many games Mississippi State wins, because Southern Miss's RPI is going to drop, win or lose. If they lose, it's going to drop a lot because of, you know, the RPI of the teams that they have left. And we touched a little bit on this, but let's take a quick review and just kind of see where things sit. So they will be at James Madison beginning this weekend. That's an RPI of 171. They will close it out at home against Georgia Southern. That's 14-34 Georgia Southern with an RPI of 208. So all of that will negatively impact their strength of schedule and their RPI. So I think, you know, the talk about Southern Miss being a top eight national seed is going to really fade, right? So there could be a situation, like let's say, you know, State ends up being, you know, the number six, and that's possible. And then Southern Miss is 11, well, then I think that's exactly how you pair it up. I don't want to see that, but not that I'm scared of winning. I would like to see Southern Miss advance. That's kind of the point that I'm making. I do think the Ole Miss situation, you know, there's a lot of people talk, hey, would they give us three? I just don't think so. Ole Miss is 13 in the RPI, but when you begin to kind of break this thing down, they're likely going to end up somewhere around 500. They're currently at 12-12 in the SEC. 500 teams in the SEC don't get to host, especially when there's so many other teams within the league that are going to finish higher. Conference finish still matters, despite what some people will tell you. So they will play Texas A&M at home this weekend. Ole Miss versus Texas A&M. And the truth of the matter is, We want to split, and I would not be upset of Ole Miss taking the series because I don't think Ole Miss is going to be able to finish above 500. But that understood, if they take the series this weekend, they've got a fighting chance. And the fact that State already has four wins over Ole Miss and plays A&M next weekend, it wouldn't hurt us if Ole Miss won the series and then we head to A&M, maybe get a split next weekend down there. Ole Miss, assuming they play the game on Tuesday, and I'm sure there's already some people checking the weather app, Tennessee Martin, RPI of 234. They should play the game. I don't know that they will. And then Ole Miss finishes up at Alabama. So if they win one of those series, let's say they win against A&M and then split against Alabama, they finish 15-50. I just don't see that happening. I mean, there's just no way that a team at 500 in the SEC is going to host. It's not going to happen. It's not. And you need to go ahead and prepare for that. And so that means Ole Miss is likely a number two, a strong number two in the NCAA tournament. And kind of where they land kind of remains to be seen. And since they are a stronger number two, and we don't do SEC regionals, like you don't have an SEC team come to your regional. You'll play in a super regional round, but you don't play in the regional round. You begin to ask yourself, okay, they shouldn't be forced to travel very far. So then you kind of begin to consider, do they slide into that Georgia Tech regional as a two? Georgia Tech probably wouldn't be happy about that. Do they go to North Carolina as a two? Maybe. But, of course, you know, Ole Miss could upset the apple cart. And I think they have to win at least four conference games. At least four. I think they got to at least get to 16 to be in contention. And I think that helps the RPI, which kind of gives you the justification to do it. But the reality of it is, of the three in-state schools, Ole Miss's current resume is the flimsiest. And that's really a testament to the quality of baseball in the state of Mississippi, that the number 13 team in the RPI is considered to have the flimsiest resume, right? Ole Miss is absolutely a tournament team, and I think a team is capable of making a run because you've got two frontline pitchers, and I know Hunter Elliott hadn't had the year many people expected, but Townsend's been great. And so if you begin to think about that team and what they could possibly do with that offense, because you and I both know, you know, we've had the benefit of seeing them all year, as of our league partners, and you kind of understand they're going to struggle with right-handed spin. You're going to need to be able to get balls in on the hands. You know, everybody in our league knows how to pitch Ole Miss. Not everybody executes it, but everybody understands it. When you go into a regional and you got these beer league softball players at Ole Miss that are going to do everything they can to hit the ball in the ballpark, and you're not used to that, you don't have the benefit of months and months and months of scouting and years of Bianco's tendencies, you can get ambushed. You absolutely can't. So as we get ready to open another great weekend of Southeastern Conference play, I just want to run down a couple things here before we kind of move on. Again, UCLA still number one and undefeated in the Big Ten. Georgia Tech is at 2, Texas at 3, Auburn RPI 4, Bama's 5, and of course Troy beats Alabama last night, so that gave us a little bit of it of a thing too, just because of the fact we don't play Alabama, but we did beat Troy. So it's not just who you beat, it's who you beat and who they beat. North Carolina's sitting at 6, Florida State's at 7. I'll be honest with you, I'm not crazy about this Florida State team. I'm really not. And I think ideally you may find them not in the top 8 when it's all said and done, but I think they're a team that would probably struggle in a road regional. That's my feeling. You know, we'll see how things play out. Of course, your Bulldogs at 8. USC is at 9. And then there's Southern Miss at 10. A&M at 11. Florida at 12. Ole Miss at 13. Oregon State at 14. You're starting to see them drop a little bit in the RPI. Kansas gets beat last night too. There were some people forecasting that they would host us in a super. If we go to Lawrence, Kansas for a super, then we might as well just go on to Omaha from there. Georgia, your SEC leading team is 16 in the RPI. What's going to happen, and I again assume that Georgia will finish up the regular season slate with some gusto because of the quality of their schedule. They get OSU this weekend. You know, what does that mean? Well, we'll see. LSU's RPI 55. Auburn is RPI 4. So let's say that Georgia splits. Yeah, I think they probably stay somewhere around the top 15. But it's an interesting quandary because of the fact, what if they just stay right there at 16? You're not going to deny the SEC champion a top 8 national seed. Something that a lot of people aren't really talking about. If Georgia wins the Southeastern Conference, despite the fact that they don't currently have a top 10 RPI, and maybe they do by the end of the year, they're going to knock somebody outside of a top 8 national seed. There's no way you don't reward the SEC champion despite what the analytics may say. You're going to have a team win 20-plus games in the number one RPI conference in the country. And again, they get the benefit of Auburn next weekend on the road, which helps even more. But I think you're going to see them finish up somewhere likely outside of the top 8 RPI. Just kind of my feeling right now. And I think that's one of those things you kind of begin to consider, that it's going to have the committee having to make some difficult decisions about how you handle the SEC. Does that bump an SEC team out of a top 8? Could that be us? Right? That's why we need to remove all doubt and win some games over the course of the next two weekends, going 4-2, I think removes that possibility for us. I think if we finish 18-12 in the league and plus 40 wins, we're absolutely getting top eight national seed. I honestly think the team that has the most to lose in the SEC when it comes to seeding, no matter what their RPI suggests, is Alabama. And I know they're 5 in the RPI, but they're 13-11, so they're a game behind Mississippi State, and you don't play head-to-head, right? And what's interesting with what Alabama has left is they get to go to South Carolina, who's got an RPI of 98, and South Carolina is certainly capable of winning one of those games. But if you're Alabama, you need to sweep. You need to sweep. And you need to take the series from Ole Miss next week. So then all of a sudden, if you're Alabama, and let's say you win 5 games, well, then that puts you at 18-12. That's a huge part of this. And so 18-12, and then that puts you, right there around 37, 38 wins. But I think one could make a case that Mississippi State would deserve to get in over Alabama as a top eight. Now, one of the things that works against State is right now we're 9-9 against the quad one. Alabama's 13-10. Now, the next two weekends, we're going to play 6 games against the quad one. So there is a situation there because, number one, South Carolina is not a quad one. So we could make up some ground on them in that respect. And so, again, these are the things. This is why we have a show, so we can kind of talk you through this. What's your rooting interest here? Well, your rooting interest this weekend between Alabama and South Carolina is South Carolina, because we got 3 wins over the Gamecocks. We don't play Alabama. So not only would that help the RPI, it would help us move up a little bit because if Alabama would descend, but also, too, it would help us in the SEC standings. So it's not just, hey, I'll just root for State. It's not that simple. I wish it was. Now, of course, if we go out and win the next 6, you end up with 20 wins, you may end up being the number 2 or number 3 national seed. You might even leapfrog Texas when it's all said and done. But it's one game at a time, but we're down here now where everything matters. And doesn't it feel great to be in this situation? This time last year, we were just hoping to get in the tournament. And right now, we're pretty much assured of hosting unless we have an epic collapse, right? So we feel very confident that we're going to host and that we should have postseason baseball at Dirty Noble Field. But here we are, and you're wanting Brian O'Connor not sweating it out trying to get in the tournament. Like last year, we were just like, hey, if we can just get the 14 wins, we'll get in. And that's really, we just get in and we'll have a chance, right? And now here we are now. On the top eight bubble, right now we're in as a top eight, right now. And you never know how the analytics are going to play, but again, you start thinking about if we split the last 6, that makes us 40-15. That's pretty significant. I think if you look at that aspect of it, it makes a lot of difference. Now, Warren Nolan's our friend. He is. He's our friend. And what's interesting, you're kind of looking at what's projected when it's all said and done. He has us losing 2 of 3 to Auburn. I guess that's possible. And has us sweeping Texas A&M. I don't know if I expect either one of those things to happen. But no matter how you slice it, I think if we go 3-3 at worst, then we can feel good about a top eight. Now, we would, anything less than that, you're going to need some help along the way. Just kind of how I see it playing out here. And right now, based on what Warren Nolan projects, is that we would have an RPI of 6, which means that we'd probably be the, 5th or 6th seed, kind of depending on how things play out. And just kind of more fun with numbers here and the way Warren Nolan sees it. Looking at this Alabama team. And again, we're looking at everybody, right? looking at their predicted team, they he still believes Alabama will be a top 10 and finish up with a 9 RPI. And again, I think that favors us. And that kind of goes along with my line of thinking that they're going to fade a little bit. And they have them taking 2 of 3 from Ole Miss. And obviously taking, they have 2 of 3 from South Carolina. So, again, I think if that works out the way that Warren Nolan projects, it's a good thing for Mississippi State. And kind of back to Southern Miss for a minute. I mean, just following the analytics here, he's got Southern Miss finishing up with a 15 RPI. And so kind of like we talked about, you know, what does that mean, you know, long term, you know, when it comes to seeding? You know, could Southern Miss end up hosting at the very end and be paired up with UCLA or Georgia Tech, possibly, right? But we're going to have some meaningful baseball played in the state of Mississippi in the month of June. And real quickly here, too, kind of looking back at Ole Miss, just kind of see what Warren Nolan thinks. And, again, nobody's done more of this stuff over the years than him. He has Ole Miss with a final RPI of 18 and a 14-16 finish in the league. So not only – I've got him maybe splitting. Warren's got him dropping, you know, two – winning two and losing four of the final six. So, again, if things go – and there's a reason we play the games, but if things go the way that Warren Nolan expects and the way that we kind of project here – Mississippi State will likely be the only sure NCAA regional host. Southern Miss on the bubble, and Ole Miss is the number two. And you got to wonder, too, you know, with Southern Miss maybe being one of the lesser hosts, could they see Ole Miss in their regional? A lot of people have projected that. Be awfully interesting to see. And the good thing is we get to watch it all play out in real time. All right, time for the top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. You can get Blair directly at 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. The reason you need that number, and just save it in your phone as mortgage guy. That way when the need pops up, you'll already have that saved. You won't be thinking, what's that guy's name? You'll already have the number saved in your phone. That's his cell number. You can call or text him direct. Not a call center, not a receptionist, directly to the man himself to get his 25 years of experience and know-how working for you. It can be a very convoluted process. It helps to know someone that knows the ins and outs of underwriting. That's Blair Chandler. He can construct loans to give you the best chance of approval. It's one of the life hacks, too. Get that pre-qualification letter, and you can see your real estate agent jump into overdrive to ensure they get you to the closing table, get that loan closed, and get you into your new home. So whether it's your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, or perhaps that game day condo, which may be more affordable than you think, the only name to know in mortgage loan origination or refinance is Blair Chandler, 601-500-2344. Okay, I decided to throw you guys a curveball today. We got some more suggestions, but and you guys have been great lately. I got to say, we got these stretches where I get some suggestions that don't really enthuse me. But you guys, over the course of the last couple months, have been really good. You've been really good. So take a bow, yeah, on behalf of the entire Boneyard staff. Thank you for your great suggestions. But today I got to thinking, you know, it's like it's the month of May. And I did a little research. What are some classic albums that were released in the month of May? You know, because like a lot of times it's very strategic, and when they release albums, you know, based on your buying patterns, and it's not as big a deal as it used to be. Nowadays, they just can't wait to get them out there. They get them out as quickly as possible. They don't even tell you a new album is coming, and they just drop it, and it spreads like wildfire on social media. You're like, oh my gosh, Drake dropped a new album at midnight, and then you stay up, and you know, of course, there's all kinds of stuff they do with that. But nowadays, the record making business is much different. Nowadays, people will release 2 or 3 singles, and then eventually string together some other songs to fill out an album. Used to, we got it all at once. We may hear an advanced single on the radio or a video on MTV, and it was really just kind of promotion letting you know that a new album was coming. It's different today. And back in those days, you couldn't run out and buy a new album every weekend. Most of us couldn't. You know, maybe it was once a month or maybe every couple of months until we got to old enough to get jobs, and then we were buying every payday. We'd buy a new album. But you know, back in those days, you made the most of your purchase, so you didn't want to buy some bad album, and you wanted to make sure that you listened to albums in their entirety, because a lot of the deeper cuts sometimes are the better tracks, the ones that resonate with us. So here are some classic albums released in May. Bob Marley's Legend was also released in May. That didn't make our list, but it's always worthy of mention. Number 10, a band that has kind of seen a little bit of a revival among the new generation is the Beach Boys. And so we're going to go with Pet Sounds, right? Wouldn't It Be Nice is the track that we're going to go with. But you know, those harmonies, those catchy bass lines, it was a lot to all that. Brian Wilson, obviously, was a bit of a genius and a little bit of a madman. But the Beach Boys did some incredible things. Number 9, AC/DC's Power Age was also released in May. We're going to go with Sin City, and it's one of those very, very, very typical Angus Young guitar riffs that just kind of make you think a little bit how simple it would be to play guitar. It's not, but he makes it sound and look simple. Number 8, I love this one, man. It's off the album Disintegration, and I think it was really kind of the breakthrough album for The Cure. Love Song is also on this album. But Fascination Street, it's one of those songs I wish that I covered because I love it so much. I do. It didn't necessarily fit the genre of the bands I was in, but man, I tell you, there is just a hodgepodge of great musical goodness in that track. I love the guitar tone on it too. All right, number 7, off the Tommy soundtrack. I don't know if you guys, you young bucks have seen the Tommy movie. And for a while there, like years ago, like one summer, it was on HBO. And sometimes WTBS would play it. And I saw Ted Turner die the day at 87. And, you know, it was just one of a weird thing. It came out in 75. And what's interesting, you know, a lot of people even to this day kind of reference that movie as some crazy things. And Anne Margaret, of course, absolutely stunning Anne Margaret. She was something else, man. And I guess she may still be. But was in a lot of stuff. But, you know, like the baked beans scene, you know, I'm talking about how wild it was. Maybe you know it, maybe you don't. But off that album, we're going to go with Pinball Wizard. Many of you learned to play this on the Rock Band video game. Number 6, off Combat Rock, it's The Clash. Many of you know it from, you know, Should I Stay or Should I Go Now. But my favorite Clash song is really unlike anything else in the catalog, and it's Rock the Casbah. Because Sharif don't like it. I don't know that I like Sharif. But if he didn't like it, I want to do more of it because I feel like Sharif and I, because of my love of the cult, of the Clash and the cult, I feel like I should be aligned with them. So that's for you, Sharif. Number 5, Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band. Of course, Bob Seger did some quote, solo stuff, but, you know, the Silver Bullet Band was basically his backup band for years. But, you know, Stranger in Town is the name of the album. A lot of people believe that's the best Bob Seger album. We're going to go with Still the Same off number 5, Bob Seger. I think you'll enjoy that one. If you don't know that album, listen to it in its entirety. You'll be glad you did. Number 4, Rolling Stones' Exile on Main Street. An interesting title. I'm not exactly sure what it means. But Tumbling Dice is the track we're going with at number 4. And it's a Rolling Stones track that probably doesn't get enough credit. Keith Richards, phenomenal, in the words of Ben Howlin, phenomenal, is a guitarist. Everything just looks so simple and easy for him. It just does. like musical genius just radiates off Keith Richards. And I remember the Dennis Leary bit where he talked about like Keith Richards doing like a Rock Against Drug commercial. Like Keith Richards tells us not to do drugs. Well, Keith, we can't. We got to wait for you to die and smoke your ashes, you know, because you've done them all. Maybe there's some truth in that. But nevertheless, it's amazing to me that Keith's still alive. But man, what an incredible guitarist. Number three, we had a couple different ways to go here. And I know I've got a friend down in Hattiesburg that is a huge Beatles fan. And he's going to be disappointed I didn't go with Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Heart Club Band. I'm going to go with Let It Be, the album and the song, just because I think that's one of those songs that people from all generations should know. Like a lot of people know John Lennon's Imagine. Let It Be, when there's times of trouble in your life, this is one of those songs that I think it's important to listen to. Just let it be. You know, it's one of the things that I have learned in long-term recovery. If I don't know which way to go, I just kind of chill, right? When you don't know what to do, then it's best not to do anything until you get into a situation where you have to choose. And that's kind of what Let It Be is about. Just let things be, you know. And listen, I'm a firm believer, guys, that one of the biggest lessons you learn in life is how strong you are. And many people run from that. But like, you've got to fall into the valley to learn how to climb the mountain. That's not my rule. It's just nature's rule, right? You got to fall down the hole to learn how to get out. And then you can go and show and tell others. But you also have this innate confidence in yourself that you're going to make it because of what you experience. And everybody's path is a little bit different, right? But the one thing that the good book tells us is that the rain falls on the head of the just and the unjust alike. We are all going to deal with something. You're not being picked on. You know, and it's so easy. Like if I want to, I can find a lot to get stressed out about, right? I can. I mean, it's like, it's a different problem, right? Like today, I had to go move some money around, right? And thankfully, I had the money, right? And I'm just sitting there thinking, man, what do I got to deal with all this? And then I remembered, as I was driving home, there was a time in my life that I was looking under my own couch cushions for change to buy gas to go to work. Right? That's the truth. Now, of course, back in those days, gas was about 90 cents a gallon. You know, nowadays, you know, it's a kidney. But I'm grateful for those days when I didn't have as much. It's not that I long for them, but they made me appreciate the journey a lot more. And one of the things that was so esteeming for me is like when I was in a retail furniture business, you know, I kept saying, you know, once I got a general manager position, right, that our real life would begin. The truth of the matter was, is my life was already ongoing. I was already married, had a kid, and I was assistant manager. And I just said, if I could just get a general manager position and run my own store, then everything will be okay. And we, you know what? I got the job. We bought a house. And, you know, Dana was kind of able to work and do what she wanted to do. You know, eventually she went back to school and became a registered nurse. And, you know, thank God that we had the ability to do that. You know, we had the ability as adults for her to go back and continue her education and get to become a registered nurse. And we are where we are today because of those. And there are so many people out there that don't have that opportunity. But I remember when she was getting ready to get her nursing job, and she's getting ready to graduate, I said, I'm going to reinvent myself once you get your nursing job, because we won't be so reliant on my income. And so, you know, you do what you have to do until you can do what you want to do, you know. And it's one of the things that I have learned, and I've spent so much time doing my best to mentor young people that ask about it in our industry. And that one of the things that I tell them is you're going to have to really learn to walk before you run. And then when you run, there's a lot more stress because you're constantly having to outrun the competition and look over your shoulder and things like that. In the beginning, nobody knows who you are. You just want to get an opportunity. You just want to get in the game, right? You just want to be on the roster. You know, but once you get in the game, then there's always somebody else trying to take your position. There's always somebody else trying to prove they're better than you. And so that's the important aspect of the first steps into any career, is just proving that you belong and that you deserve a seat at the table. You can't just go, you know, get the job as the waiter and then all of a sudden think you're the maitre d'. You know, it just doesn't work that way. You know, there's a process you have to go through. And I'm so grateful for every lesson that I've learned along the way. And there's a lot that I've forgotten. But the one that I hadn't is gratitude and humility. Number two, anytime that we can celebrate the wonderful, majestic music of Freddie Mercury on this show, we're going to do it. Released in the month of May, the album didn't do really well. But a lot of people point back at, hey, this was an evolutionary time for Queen. The album Hot Space, and we're going to go with Under Pressure, which, if memory serves me correct, was the last track on the album. Of course, with David Bowie, which have then led to Vanilla Ice and Ice Ice Baby, if you remember all the sampling controversy of the early 90s. But it's an interesting album. It feels a little disjointed to me. But, you know, like Body Language is on there. That's a good track. But there are some other ones on there that are just kind of hit or miss. But number one, in my estimation, the greatest album ever released in the month of May. It's not the Pet Shop Boys, even though they have had some albums released in May. It's Jimi Hendrix's Are You Experienced at number one. And a lot of people would go with a lot of more well-known tracks. Guys, I think every song on this album sounds like a single. I mean, Jimmy was just a genius. And then the production value for an up-and-coming artist was really kind of unsurpassed. Like, the record company didn't go cheap on this album. And it's been remastered a few times too. But of course, if you don't get it right on the originals with the masters, it's very difficult to remaster. But I'm going to go with a deeper cut that was kind of a later single. It's Stone Free from the Jimi Hendrix Experience at number one. That's your top 10 list, based on my estimation, top 10 classic rock song albums released in the month of May. Those are my feelings. You may feel differently. You'll notice there's no real like 80s hair band stuff here. There's not. I'm a little more versatile than you think. But you would be hard-pressed. And, you know, maybe the Queen Under Pressure would be a little bit high considering the average list. But because I'm a Queen guy, I put them ahead of the Beatles and the Stones. But, man, there's just so much great music that is on this list. And I would encourage you to check out these albums. There's a reason they're iconic albums. Even all these years later, we're talking about them. Many of these released in the 70s, of course. But be sure and check them out. And if you have ideas on the top 10 list or for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanti on X, Roy, my friend, at Dogmatic67, DawgMatic67. And you can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. We love Campus Bookmart. And why? Well, they got things we want. When it's gift buying time in your life, take care of all the bulldogs on your shopping list by visiting Campus Bookmart. It is a maroon and white haven. It is a smorgasbord of bulldog goodness. You will find something for every bulldog in your life, whether it's Christmas, Labor Day, Arbor Day, Amerigo Vespucci Day, any day is a good day to buy a gift for somebody you love, and you can find the things they love at Campus Bookmart. Stop by and see them the next time you're in town. If you can't make it to town, visit them on the World Wide Web, courtesy of Al Gore's internet, at campusbookmart.net. That's campusbookmart.net, if I can get it out. Use promo code BSR to get free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. And again, you need as much MOVRS gear as you can possibly muster. Football season's coming up soon. Go ahead and start shopping for that. You want to be prepared for that season opener against Louisiana Monroe. Be here before you know it. And think about those diploma frames as graduation just around the corner. Campus bookmark. Breaking news. Former Mississippi State pitcher Eric Sarantola, part of our national championship team, didn't get the pitch in Omaha, didn't make the postseason roster, has now been called up to the show by the Kansas City Royals. We're very proud of Eric. Very talented young man. For some reason, just didn't come together here, but he figured it out in the minors, and now he will be the next Mississippi State Bulldog to be a big leaguer. So congratulations to him. Let's take a look back at last night in the Southeastern Conference, and then we'll close out our show with our look at Auburn. If we look at the scores from last night, there will be some games tonight too. Well, there were. They may have been canceled. Let's see here. Tennessee, no real trouble with Presbyterian, but they had to go the full nine. Tennessee wins at 8-1. The one run from Presbyterian came in the first as Matthew Rollison hit a solo home run to give Presbyterian a 1-0 lead. They held that to the bottom of the third, and Tennessee put up a couple, then four in the sixth, two in the eighth. They win at 8-1. Out-hit Presbyterian 10-3. Garrett Wright with a home run and two RBI for Tennessee. No such trouble for Florida against North Florida. And again, North Florida has been really good in their league. They're 26-21, 17-7 in the league. But Florida with four in the first, and then they just kind of tack on and extend. Two in the fourth, one in the fifth, two in the sixth. North Florida gets on the board in the top of the seventh with a solitary run, and Florida walks it off 11-1 in a mercy ruling, 10 hits to four. Kyle Jones, a 2-for-4 night for the Gators. Billy Barlow wins in relief, ups his record to 2-0. Vanderbilt, and this is a good development for Mississippi State, even though Louisville is really having to kind of jockey for position. State with three wins over Vanderbilt. Sees the Commodores come from behind to win this game with relative ease. Louisville plates four in the first. Vandy gets one and then takes a lead in the third, 5-4. They double it up in the fourth with five runs to make it a 10-4 ball game, then one in the sixth. Louisville gets two more there in the seventh to make it somewhat interesting at 11-6, but Vandy with one there in the seventh. They play the full nine, and Vandy wins it 12-6. Logan Johnstone, a 3-for-4 night for the Commodores. Matthew Shorey with the win in relief. He's kind of been in and out of the bullpen. Vanderbilt's now 28-22 and 10-14 in the league, and you begin to kind of wonder, can Vanderbilt make the tournament? I think they may need, you know, a real late run, but also, too, a pretty good run in the SEC tournament. Auburn, Mississippi State's weekend opponent, takes care of UAB 10-2. And UAB still kind of hanging in there with a chance to win their league. They played this game in Birmingham on the UAB campus. And Auburn wins it 10-2. They limit UAB Blazer hitting to just seven hits on the night. Those two runs come in the eighth, basically to extend it to the ninth. It was a 10-0 ball game in favor of Auburn. And then UAB gets two there in the eighth to force the final inning. Bud Terrell gets 3-for-5 and 3 RBI for the Tigers. Very talented young man that we'll see this weekend. Good development for Mississippi State is Troy. Even though the Trojans have not been what we had hoped they would be this year, they host Alabama last night. Alabama gets up to a 1-0 lead. It remains a 1-0 ball game into the seventh. The Trojans get 3 in the seventh, 3 in the eighth, and win it 6-1. They out-hit the Tide 7-4. Stephen Meyer goes 3-for-3 in the ballgame for Troy. There was an interesting development for a while. We mentioned Texas A&M dropping in the RPI because of their win over Prairie View. And when you play a team that's got an RPI of about 308, it's going to happen. But Prairie View has a 4-0 lead in the third. And then pretty much from there it was all Aggies. The Aggies get five in a home half to take the lead 5-4, then tack on six more in the fourth. Prairie View rallies back with three in the fifth to make it a 10-7 game. And then from there, the Aggies get 1-6, 1-7, and 3-8. They can't get the mercy rule, so they have to play the full nine. But 16-7 is the final. The Aggies out-hit Prairie View 14-8. Prairie View 10-36 on the year. You can see why this was an RPI anchor for the Aggies. Grant Cunningham wins in relief, ups his record to 4-1 with two innings pitched. He did allow four runs in the game. Jake Dewar, talented left fielder, doesn't get a lot of press. 4-5 for the Aggies, 4 RBI with a home run. LSU, no trouble with Tulane. Tulane is 23-27 on the year, 8-13 in the league. Does not appear any postseason unless they win their tournament in their future. LSU now 8 games over .500. They jump out 9-0 through two. And then Tulane gets 1 in the 3rd, 2 in the 4th to kind of make it interesting. They add 2 more in the 5th, and suddenly it's a 9-5 ball game. But LSU just kind of takes control there with 1 in the home half of the 5th, 1 in the 6th, 2 in the 7th. Tulane gets kind of a meaningless run there in the 8th, and the Tigers win it 13-6. Of course, Bulldogs have 3 wins over LSU. So any win for them is a good thing, development for us. Danny Lackenmeyer with the win in relief. He's now 2-0 after a 3-inning stint where he struck out 5 and allowed just 1 run. Seth Darter, the talented designated hitter from LSU, goes 3-for-5 with a couple of RBI. The Roadrunners of Texas San Antonio won the regional at Texas last year. They nearly pulled off an upset last night of Texas 2 at Dish Falk Field. Texas jumps out early 4-0, and then all of a sudden, you look up, it's 7-4 in favor of the Roadrunners. It's a tie ball game through the middle innings, and then the Roadrunners take the lead in the 7th, 8-7. Texas, to their credit, gets 4 in the bottom half of the 8th to ultimately win the game 11-8. Teams 9 hits apiece. Diego Diaz, the third baseman from UTSA, 4-for-4 on the night with a home run and 2 RBI. Carson Tinney, who didn't do a whole lot against Mississippi State, went 2-for-5 with a home run and 4 RBI, and they needed all 4 of them. Arizona State's game with Missouri was canceled. There was some weather in the greater Missouri area. And there's some games out west that are being played tonight, but none in the SEC. As, you know, teams like Ole Miss and Arkansas had it off. The only series that gets underway this weekend on Thursday night is Auburn and Mississippi State. And we'll talk more about Auburn in our final segment of the show. Alabama's at South Carolina. We do expect Alabama to win that series, and they will probably sweep. But, man, wouldn't it be great if South Carolina could get 1, possibly 2? Just not expecting that. But you never know this time of year. You just simply never know. LSU is at Georgia. State with 3 wins over LSU and 3 losses to Georgia. It would be helpful for us if LSU'd win the series. You'd love for Georgia to fade a little bit this weekend and then play in Auburn next weekend. You don't want Georgia to wrap this thing up. But, you know, with 3 wins last week, it certainly seems almost unsurmountable. But they got 4-game lead over us. If LSU could pull off a shocker here, it could make things a little bit interesting. Texas will be at Tennessee. And again, that series with Tennessee still just chaps the Bulldog hide, doesn't it? Tennessee 32-17 overall, 11-13 in the standings. You know, again, we're right there behind Texas. What, game and a half? We'll check that shortly. But if Tennessee could win this series and we could win the series here, we may have a chance to catch Texas for the third spot, you know, and who knows, with the right run and the right combination of wins, we could ultimately end up 2nd. Kentucky is at Florida. You know, Kentucky, great series last week. They nearly swept Tennessee. They do get 2 out of 3 to kind of keep their hopes alive. And, you know, if you're Nick, you're thinking with our RPI, if we, somehow we can get to 15, we got a real chance. They made it before at 13-17. I think they're better than that this year. But the, you know, Florida's just 32-17. Kentucky's 29-16. There's 2 games between them in the standings. But, yeah, I like Florida to win the series, but I think Kentucky gets 1. Vanderbilt's at Missouri. We don't play Missouri. So we get no real benefit from this other than the fact that Vanderbilt could eclipse 30 wins. This is going to be played in Como. You know, sometimes it's a difficult place to go up there and play because of the wind this time of year, as we have witnessed firsthand. But yeah, Vanderbilt should win this series. I don't think there's much question about that. It's just a matter of do they sweep or not. Oklahoma's at Arkansas. We don't play Oklahoma. Arkansas is a game behind us in the standings. Arkansas has beaten us twice, but again, when you begin to think about hosting destinations and things of that nature, it may be in our best interest for Oklahoma to win this series, maybe 2-1. Perhaps. I think we want to split no matter how it works out, depending on your rooting interest. But yeah, it's an interesting dynamic for sure. But you got to wonder, like, if Arkansas drops this series, it's going to be really, really difficult to host. Really, really, really difficult to host. Texas A&M's at Ole Miss, as we kind of discussed earlier. We got 4 wins over Ole Miss. A&M is ahead of us in the standings and in RPI. Ole Miss is behind us. We don't want to sweep, obviously, but if we could get a split in favor of Ole Miss, I think that helps us. I think Ole Miss getting a sweep over A&M may have them leapfrog us in the RPI. I just think in the end it's not going to matter, but I don't think they're going to be able to get a sweep against that Aggie team. You know, we'll see. Gavin Grahovic still having a great year for them, 362, 17 bombs, 64 RBI. So we'll see how it plays out. But, yeah, a split in Ole Miss's favor certainly wouldn't hurt our feelings. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. But, yeah, looking at the standings here, Georgia right there at 18-6. So, again, 4 games ahead of us in Auburn. Then there's A&M at 15-8, Texas at 15-8. State missed an opportunity to catch Texas last week. We are tied with Auburn. That won't last, right? Because we're going to play all 3 games this weekend. And so the winner of that series would have a game up on the other with 3 games to play. And then we travel to A&M and Auburn hosts Georgia. So it's not like either of us has a walk in the park, which makes this series all the more important. But you begin to look at Texas and their schedule, and you kind of begin to realize that, you know, they got some things to kind of figure out. You know, they great team, but they got to go to Tennessee, and then they host Missouri. So it's going to be very difficult to catch them if they play as well as they have played as of late. And as I go back to last week, I think our best chance, now that we've lost this series to Texas, is to possibly catch Texas A&M, because they're going to have to play well against 2 teams that are playing for something of significance. Texas is kind of playing out the string once they get through this weekend, because Missouri's going to be ready to get done, right? But A&M's got to play Ole Miss, who wants to host, and then plays Auburn, who wants to be a top 8. I guess they play us. We want to be a top 8. They lost to Auburn last weekend. So A&M, difficult path to kind of hang on to number 2. I think in the end of this thing, Texas will end up being the number 2 team in the league, I think, when it's all said and done. Of course, and if we end up in the top 4, of course, we get the double bye in the SEC tournament. That's an important distinction to save some pitching. Not that we feel like we need to go win the SEC tournament, but just finishing, you know, conference finish still matters. So finishing the top 4, no matter what happens in Hoover, is an important aspect. They're not going to see the tournament based off 1 weekend. All that's very important to kind of understand as we move forward. But, man, you know, we talk about, you know, Vanderbilt not going to host. But at 10-14, they still have a chance to make the tournament. And you win this weekend. Let's say you sweep at Como. You're 13-14. And I don't know if the RPI is there. But Vandy closes with Missouri and South Carolina. So you feel like they should be able to at least get 4 of those last 6. So that would make them 14-16, just 1 game beneath 500. I guess 2 games beneath 500 in SEC play. And you feel like they would make the tournament. They'd end up with 32 wins, plus whatever they do in the SEC tournament. But, man, are we going to get 13 teams in? I don't know that we are. but I think they could end up leapfrogging Tennessee and potentially Kentucky when it's all said and done, and we should get 11 teams in. So again, Vanderbilt is kind of playing for themselves, but also we know they're playing for us too. And you look at this thing, you kind of beneath them, LSU 9-15. It's going to be difficult for the Tigers to make the tournament unless they get really hot and go on a run in Hoover. The best they can do in conference play now is 500. They get at Georgia, and then they host Florida at Alex Box, and anything can happen there. But the chances of them winning all six of those games, I think, is pretty slim. Let's say they win 4 of 6. I don't expect that. I think the best you can hope for is to go 3-3, which would put LSU probably in a position where they would have to win the SEC tournament. South Carolina 7-17, trending towards a coaching change. Again, you just don't see it happening for them. But, you know, they got some games left, obviously. Alabama, they got a non-conference game against Winthrop, and then they're at Vanderbilt. And so, again, two teams playing for something of significance while South Carolina's kind of playing out the string. You know, we'll see how things kind of break out for them. But, again, looking around our league, I think our league for the most part is pretty healthy, but there's a lot of parity. There's a ton of teams that have the potential to have a winning record. Matter of fact, there are 13 teams that have the potential to have a winning record in Southeastern Conference play as we head into the final two weekends. And so there's going to be a lot of adjustment in the standings, especially in the middle part of the league, and that's why State needs to kind of just stay ahead of the fray right here. We just take care of business, let the traffic clear around us, and then hopefully find our ways into a top eight national seed. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Historic Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, especially when you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. We've done it. We had a great time there, New Year's of 25. It was a spectacular experience. Plenty of room for everybody to kind of spread out. Everybody have their own private quarters, but also a lot of communal areas to play some games, enjoy some cinnamon rolls, watch some TV, just enjoy being a family. And I treasure that experience, and I suspect you would as well. Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page auto-populates. You can see all the amenities available to you and your guests, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area, plenty of parking. That's an underrated amenity when you're getting a lot of people together. You don't have to worry about where to park. It's the old renovated country club out past the Highlands on 182, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. So if they could accommodate all those golfers, they can accommodate your guest, right? So one last thing to worry about, super cool, only a couple neighbors out there, plenty of peace and quiet. We don't want you throwing a rager, but it's a chance for you to go make some memories with the people you care the most about. When you do that Google search, there's going to be some booking options that pop up for you too. Airbnb, Vrbo, VRBO, depending on how you want to go with it. You can go that route, or you can save some money by booking through the Evolve website. Use promo code BSR10, that's BSR10. That gets you 10% off your stay just by listening to this show. Super cool place, super great amenities, and super close to Mississippi State. It's open 365 days a year, so whether it's a ball game weekend or you just got some vacation time you want to spend in the greatest city in the United States, Starkville, Mississippi, maybe it's a work group, and you're going to be scattered out across the Golden Triangle, it's a great place to just kind of have a home base where everybody kind of has their own room, but you've got some area to work. The Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none. As we get ready to preview Auburn, there is some interesting news. Ryan McPherson, the Mississippi State pitcher that has been out since the Vanderbilt series, is not listed on the availability report, which is a good thing, right? The only Bulldog listed is Aiden Teal, who is questionable. Ryan McPherson has been out for several weeks. He is not listed as questionable. He is not listed as doubtful. He is not listed as probable. He is not listed, which means that he is available. Does that mean that he plays in the bullpen? Does he start on Sunday? Mississippi State is elected to throw out Thomas Valinkas on Thursday, Duke Stone on Friday, and then TBA on Saturday. Is O'Connor playing a little gamesmanship? I was told last weekend that we'd probably see him against A&M. Wouldn't be mad if he came out and pitched this weekend if he's ready to go. So that's an important aspect of every bit of this. Every bit of it. It's all good stuff, man. Let's take a look at Auburn. Kind of see what season they've had. You're talking to Butch today. We love Butch, man. We love Butch. How could you not love Butch? He's from Amory, Mississippi, right? Butch says, hey, you know, when the preseason rankings came out, I didn't think it was fair because we lost so many guys and it's a young team. What looks like the experts kind of got it right. I remember Chris Berg early on upset some Bulldog fans when he said, hey, Auburn is really good. They should be ranked ahead of Mississippi State. Whether they should have been at the time or not, they are right now. Number one strength of schedule in the country. And a great RPI. So we'll see how things kind of play out there. But, let's kind of take a look at the season that was. The Tigers sweep Youngstown State. But, man, there were a couple of competitive games. 2-1, 2-1. And one, that second one goes 10 innings. And then they win 17-2, Youngstown State. The Penguins just don't have the pitching. Then they lose to Cincinnati in the first midweek game of the year. They head to the Amegy Bank College Baseball Series out in Arlington. They take down Kansas State, Florida State, and Louisville. And you know, Louisville obviously was ranked 15th at the time, not so much anymore. Tie ball game with West Georgia. Auburn wins it 4-3, but again, a lot of offensive struggles early on. Nebraska comes in, takes game one in 10 innings. Auburn responds by taking the next two, and then the Cornhuskers win 20 of the next 21, which has really helped Auburn in strength of schedule and in the RPI. They take down Samford 6-2, and then they have a three-game series against Winthrop, which has surprisingly had a pretty good RPI this year, again helping Auburn. Guys, Winthrop scored one run on a weekend. 10-0, 6-0, 8-1 is your final. They blast UAB 17-2 in just seven innings, and of course they get them again last night. They open SEC play by sweeping Missouri and Como, but two of those games very competitive. The Tigers win 2-0, and then Auburn wins 4-3 in 10, and then on game three they win 9-2. Big non-conference matchup on St. Patty's Day as Georgia Tech comes in and Auburn hammers them 9-2. They played a home-and-home, but really the other one, the return game, was at Truist Park. We'll get to that shortly. Auburn hosts Texas, and that's one of those common opponents, right? All three games were largely competitive, two more so than the other. Auburn wins game one, 4-3. Loses 7-6, and then 5-0 on Sunday. We just played Texas, too. We know the brand of offense they play and how difficult that lineup is to kind of contend with. But, it's a significant series for everybody. Texas was expected to be very good. They are very good, so it's been a measuring stick for everybody in the league. After that series loss, they go to Montgomery, and they take care of South Alabama 10-0, and South Alabama's had a pretty good year. And then you get into the rivalry series, and then Auburn gets swept by Alabama. And that was one of those big, you want to wonder why Alabama's been so highly regarded in RPI? This is one of the reasons why, because Auburn, with the number one strength of schedule, has won a lot of ball games against some very good teams, and it's three wins for Alabama. So they're kind of riding the coattails of Auburn. And then you know, the losing slide kind of continues. They go to Truist Park. They go to Atlanta, and they lose 13-3 to Georgia Tech. The Arkansas series goes the ways of Auburn. They win Friday, win Sunday. They lose the middle game 3-2. Jacksonville State, as Coach Thompson says, they wore them out. Jacksonville State beats Auburn 15-4 in Auburn in eight innings. Then it's the matchup of the former Bulldog assistants. The John Cohen assistants, Nick Mangione, Butch Thompson going head-to-head. Auburn wins 12-5, loses 5-4, and then wins 11-0 in a mercy rule game on Sunday. It was ladies' night at Plainsman Park on Tuesday, April 14th. I wonder if ladies got in free. I'm not exactly sure what the promotion was, but hey, did ladies get in free and drink free? Is that how that works? 13-0 is a final over Alabama State. Then Auburn goes down to Florida, and you knew it would be a tightly contested series. It was, but it goes the way of the Tigers. They lose game 1-6-3, but bounce back to win 5-3 and 8-5. Then they blast Samford at the Hoover Met 14-2. We knew that the Auburn-Oklahoma series would be well-pitched. It was, for the most part. Auburn wins game 1-6-4, loses game 2-1, and then it is a blowout in favor of Auburn on game 3, 14-4. A game that went just 8 innings. Last weekend, Auburn absolutely ambushes A&M in game 1. They went 18-5 in 7 innings. I bet there was nobody left wearing maroon except for the event management staff come that 7th inning. Crazy game on Saturday, but Auburn finds themselves on the winning side of it. 5-4 is your final, and then the Aggies salvage game 3, 4-3. And then on Tuesday, Auburn takes care of UAB 10-2. And that kind of brings us where we are. The Tigers, 33-14 overall, 14-10 in the conference, 20-8 in home games, 8-6 in true road games. And some of those, of course, have taken place, you know, within the state of Alabama. 5-0 on neutral fields. 3 of those, of course, came at Arlington. Now, looking inside the numbers here, we'll start with pitching. That's the calling card of Butch Thompson, obviously. And they've really done a good job. And I think one of the biggest things this year for Auburn is they've been able to remain healthy. That's one of the most important aspects of this thing. And there have been some years where Butch and those guys have just not been able to find anybody because of injuries. They do have two players out, Drew Whalen and Ryan Farber. None of those are like new things. But on the pitching side, we're going to see Jake Marciano, who is one of their better starters. He has the lowest earned run average, in 12 starts this year. He's 4-3 with a 2.26. He's thrown a staff high 67 and two-thirds of an inning. Allowed 17 earned runs on 48 hits. So well beneath the hit per, and not giving up many runs. 87 punchies against 12 walks. He has had the propensity to give up the long ball. He has given up a staff high 10 home runs, a staff high 11 doubles. So when you hit him, you have the opportunity to get extra bases. He also leads the staff with 10 hit by pitches. And you can say, well, Steve, the guy that throws the most inning. Yeah, but it kind of speaks a little bit to that earned run average too. You know, he's given up 5 unearned runs, but I think it's one of those things, too. Again, you can get to him. Alex Petrovic, we think he is going to throw on Sunday or Saturday. We think. And Andreas Alvarez will probably throw on Friday. Butch told me earlier today they had to play a doubleheader on Saturday, and he just couldn't ask everybody to move up. But Marciano is going to throw on 5 days rest. It's tough. It is. And Butch said, I'm a little bit worried about our starting pitching this weekend because of how much we've had to pitch. But what's interesting about Auburn is you get into the statistics. Auburn leads the Southeastern Conference in earned run average. 3.33, right? Mississippi State is third. Texas right ahead of us, and then there's us and then Florida. So Mississippi State doing a good job as well. But the number of runs allowed, Auburn just 174. Yeah. And then 148 of those are earned. And everything is about run production and run reduction. Auburn pitching's done a good job in that respect. So that's something to kind of, you know, look at, kind of work through. What's interesting, too, on the hitting side, because we see a lot of our Bulldog fans saying, you know, we're just not a great offense. Well, we're second in the Southeastern Conference with a 3.10 average, trailing only Georgia. It's really been us and Georgia throughout the year. We're just kind of doing it different ways. We have a lot more doubles. They have a lot more home runs. Bulldogs got 86 this year. It's going to be difficult for us to catch, to reach the 100 mark. But, you know, we'll see what happens. Depends on how long we play, right? A little bit behind the pace. You know, we had that wild weekend in Missouri last year. We set a school record. To break the record. But all of it is very interesting. You know, the numbers itself, because you only become acutely aware of what happens in the big maroon bubble. You don't think about that aspect of it. And when we start looking at runs scored in the Southeastern Conference, yeah, Bulldogs tied for second. Georgia has the most, 466, and then State and A&M right there at 422. So, yeah, we're a team that hits for average and scores a lot of runs. You know, you wouldn't know it to look at social media and look at the message boards, but that's the truth. Now, this bullpen has been really good. Jackson Sanders has been good. He has three saves, and one of those coming last week in the doubleheader. Andreas Alvarez went the full seven innings in a game against A&M last week. Sanders had to close one out for him. But, yeah, they got a lot of guys that have pitched a lot of innings, and all that's important to know. Looking at the offensive side, it's been Eric Guevara, who has pretty much led them in most statistical categories this year. He's hitting 362, 11 jacks, 42 RBI. Well, not really a stolen base threat, but he is a guy that can hit for extra bases. Not a ton of walks. You'd probably like to see more of that. Brandon McCrane, another regular that you don't read a lot about, hitting 351. One of the reasons you don't hear about him a lot, not a lot of power numbers, but 14 of 16 in stolen bases. Chris Rembert is a sophomore, tough out, hitting 331. He's got three jacks. Chase Frelick, guy with a tennis background, pretty crazy stuff, man. He's a great athlete. He's 12 jacks, 38 ribbies, hitting 331. Ethan Bingman is a freshman first baseman, sitting 324. Got nine jacks, 33 RBI. I mean, this is a young team. Auburn's a team that should be 8 for Omaha as soon as the season ends, thinking about next year. We talked about Bub Terrell, probably a guy we should have recruited. 11 home runs, 34 RBIs, hitting 308. I mean, the list just kind of goes on and on. They're hitting 303 as a team, so not too far behind us. And again, they've played a really comparable schedule. Bristol Carter, an absolute menace. 305 is the average, couple of jacks. But the number that jumps off the page, 27 of 28 in stolen bases. They're 61 of 76, but the number that really catches my attention is 24 of 35 attempts defensively. People are not stealing bases on Auburn. Just not doing it. And that's kind of what happens. If you get thrown out early, then everybody thinks twice about it. And so that's one of the things that's important. They're a team that likes to run a little bit. You know, it's not like they're Oklahoma where they got 100 stolen bases. But they will try to get an extra 90, and they will do their best to prevent you from getting one. But, yeah, I like State to win the series partially because, number one, we're all beat up. I think McPherson coming back in any capacity helps Mississippi State. I also know that everybody is a little bit tender this time of year, and that's the case for Auburn, too. And I know Butch will have a plan. He always does. Very talented coach, as we know from experience. But I think State takes it 2-1. I can't tell you which two, but I kind of like State's options on Thursday night. I know that Valenkas had a good outing last week, but maybe not a great outing. And I think one of the reasons that maybe we shut down Valenkas and Stone last week, short of 100 pitches or so, was kind of in anticipation of this week. And then Auburn having to move guys up because they had to throw the doubleheader, and both of those guys went about 100 pitches. So Valenkas comes up a day. Marciano comes up two. So does that factor? I think it probably does. Jackson Sanders also threw extensively over the weekend. So it's just part of the game, man. I mean, it's just one of those things you look at. Everybody's kind of dealing with the same thing this time of year. And we're just kind of working through it as best we can. But as you guys know, you know, at this point, it's not even so much, you don't even think about, hey, we need to win the weekend. It's like, we need to win right now. And what does that do for our RPI? Just playing teams with these top 10 RPIs will help us. And it also helps us from when we lose, it's not a huge drop. You can make up some ground, you can lose some ground, but you kind of end up almost right where you were if you get a split. We need to find a way to win one of these last two series, if not both, because we want to end up no worse than 3-3, and we hope 4-2. I got some people thinking, oh, we're going to sweep Auburn. I have a tough time wrapping my mind around that. I'm going to take State 2-1, with State winning a game on Friday, and then we'll see what happens the rest of the weekend. But the thing that I know that could make the big difference is you guys. When we played LSU, and listen, I know it's not the LSU teams of recent year or of yesteryear. I've never seen a crowd at Duty Noble take over a game the way you all did against LSU, especially Friday, Saturday. I've just never seen it. I've wanted to see it, but as we've talked on the show before, you've had some pitchers, the crowd gets going, they'll just throw to first and everybody stops. Not against LSU, you didn't. And it mattered. And you could see it in the body language of those LSU pitchers. Because everybody, that's the release valve, right? It's like, oh, the crowd's all, I'll just throw to first, they'll shut up. But you didn't. You just kept right on rocking, and next thing you know, it's ball here, ball there, and then it's a grand slam for Jacob Parker. Right? Those are the things where we can make Duty Noble a feared place to play. We don't just want 15,000 people to show up to watch a ball game. We want you to be a part of the ball game. And that's where I think this weekend, the last home series of the regular season. And there's no guarantee that we're going to have any more baseball at Duty Noble Field. We feel confident about having a regional, but there are no guarantees. If you want a regional, we need you here this weekend because we need to win this weekend. There's no question about that. We need to win. And let's say you get two this weekend and you get at least one next weekend, I think you're going to be comfortable with the, with the fact that you're going to host and probably have some ease heading into the selection. And then you're just kind of sweating out the top eight thing. But before we can get to A&M, we got to take care of Auburn. Now, we expect to get all three games in. I know the Facebook meteorologist will tell you otherwise. We're going to get all three games in, barring something totally unforeseen. And I want you guys to be careful tonight. But we need you in Starkville. Mississippi State needs you in Starkville. Duty Noble Field needs you in Starkville. And when we get a team on the ropes, we need you to help us knock them out. When this team in Maroon and White needs some juice and needs to have the wind at their back, that's where you come in. You're a huge part of this. Huge part. And again, when I recollect back to that fabulous inning that we came back, really every game, I guess, against LSU, but that incredible comeback, you guys took ownership of the weekend and of the tradition of Mississippi State. And it was a historic night, even with LSU not being what they historically have been. That's our primary rival in baseball. And you guys refused to let us lose. And you made a difference in our dugout and in the minds of our players. And so I invite you out this weekend. If you're on the fence about coming, get off the fence and pack the car. And come to Starkville and come help support this team as we try to wrap up our postseason resume and ensure that we host and put ourselves in a position to be a top eight. If you hadn't done so, visit DutyNobleBook.com. You get signed copies of all of my sports titles. Of course, that's Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dog Pile, and The Dude, the biography of Duty Noble, along with the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls. Come float with us at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. If you've got chronic pain, anxiety, or just need a break, or you need a unique Mother's Day gift, we can help you. Call my lovely wife, Dana, at 662-268-7601 for more information. You can visit TrueRest.com to learn more about the joy of floating and the health benefits that could be a part of that for you. And come join us over at JeansPage.com. Again, the most comprehensive coverage of Mississippi State sports in the history of Al Gore's internet. We take a lot of pride in that. We were the only Mississippi State media entity in Austin. I suspect we'll be the only one at Texas A&M, but we're going to be there. And once those games go final, we can claim that we were the only Mississippi State media entity that covered every single Mississippi State baseball game again this year. We've done it for years, but it's one of those personal points of pride for me and my staff that we provide in-person coverage because we believe after a big ball game, you need to hear from your coach. We believe you need to hear from your players. So we're there to be your eyes and ears. And we'd love for you to support us in our endeavors to take Mississippi State sports coverage to the next level. That's just so important for us. It's not just a job, but it's a passion for us. And we love Mississippi State as much as you do. And we enjoy being there and being your ambassador and being able to ask, you know, your coaches and players about big moments in big ball games, win or lose. And we don't always get enough time to get to everything. We do the best we can. But your support means the world to us. And again, if you come to jeanspage.com today, you can get 50% off the annual subscription price. And you're going to get the best coverage of Bulldog baseball anywhere. We make all the big room stuff free. Whether you're a subscriber or not, you can go watch our videos for free over at jeanspage.com. And we want to be your one-stop shop for all Mississippi State sporting news. Well, listen, we'll be back on Friday, and we'll recap whatever happened on Thursday, look around the league, and then preview the rest of the weekend. By that time, we'll have a better idea of who Auburn's going to throw. We think we know. We just don't know the order. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.